Some women impersonate Sex and the City's Carrie Bradshaw with vast closets full of fantastic clothing. Even Sarah Jessica Parker pretends to be Carrie Bradshaw when she walks the red carpet. However, there is one woman in New York City who, if he knew her, would have been Darren Star's real muse. Let me introduce you to Susan S. Warner, the adorable petite blonde who at 59 lost her handsome, extraordinary husband to cancer 6 months after her wonderful 32-year-old son died by suicide. It's now 4 years later. After the most challenging days and nights, Susan decided to live her best life possible. And just like that, Susan was suddenly single. Carrie may have Susan beat on exposure, but Susan has Carrie beat on life's experiences. Listen in.
It's 6 years, Susan, since your life changed in ways you never predicted. It's been quite a journey. Many people who are just facing similar situations wonder how you got through it and who you really are today. People are frightened by the changes in their lives. They want to know what you think about when you are alone. This is the time of year for reflection, just after New Year's. Tell us what's inside your head. Susan, are the holidays, like New Year's, more difficult than other days of the year?
I think the anticipation of the holidays is actually harder than the actual holiday. The days leading up to the Jewish holidays, the Christmas holidays, New Year's, Passover, are anticipatory. I do a lot of time remembering what was. I also believe that I often feel the loss of the unit, my nuclear unit, more, because in my striving to be independent, I want to be able to go these things on my own. And that's a little bit difficult when your nuclear family was cut in half. So yes, the anticipation to the holidays is more difficult. The holiday in of itself usually plays out just fine. It does.
Well, that's a relieving answer. Interesting that you put it that way, because it's true. I've had that happen to me too, but it's interesting that you feel that way too. Do you really
don't we anticipate things? The anticipation to so many things we do, doctor's appointments, confrontations, work confrontations. We always think that the anticipation is probably worse than the actual.
Yes.
And I think this holds true with holidays and birthdays and anniversaries as well.
Do you feel festive during the holidays, or how do you feel?
I do feel festive. I try to remember that I'm here in the present, and that the holiday is here to be celebrated. So yes, I do feel festive. I'm rounding a birthday next month with anticipation, and again, anticipation, wondering how I want to celebrate that. For the past few years, I've gone away to escape it, and I think this year I'm going to plow into it head on. So I do feel festive. I'm happy for the people that love me, that I love, that I surround myself with, happy for my daughter and my son-in-law, and you know, my companion, and all the people that I celebrate the holidays with, even the joy on the street, wishing people a happy holiday, making things better, the beauty of the city. I do look forward to holidays. So yes, the celebration can be nice. It can be anything you want it to be. That's the beauty of it, as big or as small as you choose.
Glad to hear it. I'm curious about this though, Susan. Do you have, or did you have, post-traumatic stress disorder? I mean, you went through so much. I mean, I know you pretty well, and yet I don't know the details of how you really exploded or imploded during this whole entire situation.
That's an interesting right turn from discussing the holidays. I'll give you that. Do I have PTSD? Yes, I probably do. I've been told by a professional that I probably do. That the things that I put in place in my life to protect myself from further trauma is not always positive, and it's not always negative. Whether I build walls, whether I refuse to get as close as I could, whether I give of all of myself emotionally, is probably a reflection of PTSD. How do you change that? I guess by talking to someone, and that's what I do. I didn't actually realize I had it. I've wavered through, I put up a wall, I'm protecting myself too, that's a cop out, it's just not with the right person, or they're just not fulfilling the emotion, to I put up a wall, I have PTSD. I shudder to use the word because I think it's overused in our society, kind of like that word trigger, but I believe that yes, probably based on the early death of my mother, the death of my son, and the death of my husband, I do suffer from some post-traumatic whereby I want to shelter myself in the future of getting hurt again. So the answer is yes, and it's not necessarily a positive thing.
Right. But when I asked that question, I meant, are there times where you just collapse and become hysterical, or you get very nasty, or you just can't control yourself, or you just break down and cry?
I will say to you that I am good 360 days a year, about, and 5 days I am a bloody mess. And I allow myself those 5 days. When I'm in it, when I was in it in the beginning, I tried to compensate, I tried to shake out of it, I tried to say, don't do this. Now I realize that they're necessary. So if that's what you're referring to, yes, there are about 5 days a year, and they usually are around the anniversary of the deaths and the birthday of my son, and maybe something else that triggers it, that I feel so much hurt and so much pain that breathing is hard, let alone functioning. So like everybody else who has endured, it's not a party all the time, and it's not easy all the time, but if you do the percentage of 360 over 5, it's a pretty good percentage of the days I feel good.
So there's nothing that happens during the normal course of business that makes you, lash out in some way or.
You mean triggers. That's the word you're looking for, right?
Okay,
triggers.
Yes. That's a good word.
Not really. In fact, I imparted on you once before that when I went to my son's best friend's wedding and my best, my dear friend said, this must be hard for you. No, it's not hard. It was beautiful. I was so happy for them. And I got to, see David there in my mind's eye, enjoying his friend, happy for his friend. So it's not really triggers. It's not really seeing something, going to a restaurant, a dream. It's not really that. It's more the anniversaries, the really deep, dark days when I really scroll into my phone and look at the pictures and read the emails and read the texts and deep dive into the pain. And I put my hands in front and do a swan dive straight into it. And it hurts and it hurts. And sometimes the pain feels good because it feels. And I understand in those brief moments how people enjoy pain. Mm-hmm. Because it makes me feel. And maybe some days I numb myself and some days I compartmentalize how I feel. And that works for me and I think that's healthy for me. But those days that I don't and I do deep dive into it, it's like a wounded animal. It's the deepest, rawest pain that I've ever experienced.
So Susan, from the very beginning, this wasn't a constant. You kept it to a minimum. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that is what I'm saying. As I have expressed before, most days, so most days on a 0.01 percentage, I look forward to getting out of bed in the morning. I look forward to my walk by the river with my dog, Winston. I look forward to my day's plans. I look forward to seeing my friends. I look forward to being with whoever I'm with. Yes, for the most part, I am happy and live my life and look forward to each and every day. It's just those few days that are brutal.
So,
and that was from the beginning.
Right. That's amazing. From using you as a model, how do folks keep it to a minimum? How can they model themselves after you?
That's a good question, Lois. I don't think there's a prescription for this. I have always had an overwhelming desire to live. I want to be here. I've never contemplated not wanting to be here. I've lived my life trying to take care of my health and be the healthiest I can be because I want to go for the long haul. So I've always had that survivor instinct. I see the good around me. It far outweighs the bad. The pleasant outweighs the negative. The goodness and the positive feelings outweigh the pain. So if I'm that person that decides that they want to live, I'm going to live the best life I can. And that's what I suggest people do. Do what makes you happy. Do what will make you smile. Find those things. Because I'm a firm believer in being proactive in your life and taking the bull by the horns. So if it's anything from trying to make a business to writing a book to doing a podcast, if I want to do it, I go after it. And that's how I suggest people don't live in complacency and spin around in boredom. Everybody's got a bucket list. Everybody's got a wish list. Do it. It'll make you feel so much better. And that's what's kept me jumping forward. All of those good things, all of those exciting things that I want to do, want to see, want to live, want to act on, that I know I have a limited time on this earth like everybody else, right? We're not infinite. I want to fit it all in. And I hope that other people want to fit in everything they want to do too.
So Susan, I mean, these are magical words and probably the best words that anyone could get out of a podcast about attitude and being proactive and doing what you have to do to keep your life alive. But what made you that you could be so, you know, positive about this when the rest of us want to dwell in our misery?
There's a question whether it's DNA or it's experiences that you've had, or it's just who you are, what makes up who you are. Losing my mother at a young age as an adolescent, I knew then that I wanted to go on. It's almost like, it's so bizarre that I was there was a preface for this life, that I was dealt this hand to learn how to cope. You know, I've said before, if life is about a test, then the saying goes, you know, God only gives you what you can handle. I'm done being tested, please.
Right.
I've got all I can handle. I don't need any more tests. Thank you. Mm-hmm. But if this was given to me because I could handle it, I don't know. Or I could handle it because it was given to me. That's a question, Lois, I can't answer, but I do know, and I have mentioned this before, not to bore anyone, I come from a very strong matriarchy of a grandmother and a mother who were very strong, wonderful, compassionate, kind, wonderful women. And I pass this down, I think, to my daughter, who is that as well. And wonderful. They endured in their life and wanted to give the best life they could. And when that's what you see, I guess you learn by example, right? So when that's what you see, that's what you do. So I think DNA from them, experience from what I have experienced. I have a relationship with my brothers that is second to none. And people look at us and say, how can three siblings be like this? And I think, yes, we had a good upbringing, but some of it is just because we are who we are. And I think that my relationship with my daughter and my relationship with David was the same thing. Just a capacity to love, a capacity to find joy, feel joy, enjoy was what I was given. And that is what I want to continue to give and to get.
Beautiful. Do you make New Year's resolutions?
I do not. You know, when David was really struggling with gambling particularly and some drug problems, I made those bargains with the higher being. And I paid my debt. You know, when I made a bargain, I paid it if it worked out, and it didn't work out. I don't make resolutions. I just try to live the best life I can and be the best person I can. You know, ultimately, and I say this to all my friends, when they complain about a sister, a sibling, a parent, a friend, you know, you only have to look yourself in the mirror. That's it. You just have to get up in the morning and be happy with the person you see. You don't really need to learn about anybody else. You don't need to be anybody else's conscience. That's not our role on this earth. So I feel that as long as I can be the best person I can be, and I do what I think is right, I don't think resolutions and bargaining and all of that does well. I'm not superstitious because I don't think it gets you anywhere. Proof in my life, it doesn't work. So no, I do not make New Year's resolutions.
Having said what you've just said, over the last few minutes. How different are your goals from other women your age?
You know, I'm a college counselor by trade, and I sit with my students in the opening and say, do you have any idea what you want to be when you grow up? Because I just learned about 2 years ago. I have had several very successful careers. I was in retail and then wholesale, public relations and wholesale. And then I've written the rest of my life as a journalist by trade. But this journey I'm on now of writing this book and giving these podcasts and writing these articles for places like Newsweek have really made me find my passion. Everyone always said to me, write the book, you're such a good writer. Not until you find your subject. And through this, I found my subject and I found my voice. So I hope that the listening public will support Never Say Never, Never Say Always when it comes out. And I can help people through my experiences and what makes you muddle through profound grief to find a better life.
So,
but I think I'm a little bit more ambitious than most women my age. Mm-hmm. Because I've only found my way and found my voice recently.
Maybe they never found theirs.
Maybe. Or they don't want to look. And that's fine,
too.
Well,
they don't want to look,
I just always wanted to look. And I feel very fulfilled at this point. Very. And it's a wonderful feeling.
So I'm listening to you, and I'm just wondering whether any false starts in the last few years of what you're talking about?
Are you talking about personally, professionally, emotionally?
Emotionally, you know, personally, like, you know, you say you get up and you look in the mirror, this is going to be a great day. And then for some reason, you know, you don't have that attitude like 2 hours later. I mean, are there false starts in the goals that
absolutely.
You want to get?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There are days that aren't as good as others, but you have that too, and so does everybody I'm sure who's listening to this podcast. I have days that are sad or dark or unhappy, but everybody does. I don't think mine outnumber anybody else's, and I don't, and I've said this before, I never ever quantify anybody else's grief or pain ever, because pain is what is pain to you. It's not to be quantified, and there's no, you know, metric. And if you lose someone at this age, then you get to hurt more. It doesn't work that way. So I have the same, I am not, you know, in a clown's nose and a red fuzzy wig running around the street saying ho, ho, ho to everybody every day. I have dark days and sad days, and I get quiet when I get like that. I don't really lash out. I get quiet. And when I get quiet, the people around me know that something's probably wrong.
But you don't allow it to continue for very long.
If I can turn it around, yeah. As I've told you before, I go out, I walk the dog, I run an errand, I do some reading, I do some work. I do things that take me out of a spinning spiral. Spirals are the worst thing for me, and I think for everybody else, where you just spin and spin and spin, and that's so counterproductive. So I try to pull myself out of spirals with tools that I have in my toolbox. Mm. And whether that's, you know, it's funny. My friend said to me the other morning about walking Winston by the river every day. And we walk for 2 hours. That dog goes out for 2 hours, no matter what the weather. And he said, you know what? I think it's as much for you. And it is. You know, on Monday morning, I arrange my week. On Tuesday mornings, I put my ducks in a row. I solve problems. I talk to Michael and David. I talk to friends on the phone. It's for me. So I have tools in my toolbox that pull me out. I go to a movie. I can figure more things out watching a movie and thoroughly engrossed in the movie at the same time on another level, figuring things out or relaxing or taking a breath or putting things in perspective. So yeah, they're just tools that help me move on from those emotions. And they're pretty healthy ones, I think.
So one question that I think everyone wants to ask you is, how do you avoid from feeling cheated that these things happen to you? And you look around at other families and, you know, they haven't been damaged the same way.
I think the operative point you just made is the same way. Everybody's been damaged. We all are like that tree that loses the branch in the storm and a more beautiful branch grows on the other side. We all have scars. Scars make us smarter and more intuitive and better. Cheated, you know, I'll go on to say, and I said this when my mother died when I was 18, I had 18 years with the most extraordinary mother that most people don't get in a lifetime. I had 32 years of David that were bigger than life. I had 38 years of Michael married, 40 years together that were a lifetime. Mm-hmm. And they stay with me and they make me richer and better. And I was lucky for them. You know, my daughter and I joke that we're the luckiest, unlucky people you'd ever want to meet. So much good. Yeah, that's quite a saying. And I live by right. that. I'm the luckiest, unlucky person you've ever mm-hmm. met. Mm-hmm. So there's so much good. There's so much joy. There's so much to be had. The cheating, feeling cheated is like being jealous or envious. They're negative emotions. They right. All they do is zap your strength and get you nowhere. I don't have time or energy to get caught up in that. Wow. It won't ever play out. It won't ever serve me well. If I can tell you that I'm the luckiest unlucky person and that I'm just going to keep marching forward, having wonderful things happen and weathering the things that aren't good. You know, I learned early that when someone says things can't get worse, they can. When David died, people said to me, it can't get worse than this. Well, it did.
Yeah, right.
So I don't ever say things can't get worse. I'm grateful for every day that things are good. Mm-hmm. And I don't get caught up in the negativity. It will not work.
Well, you're
so
wonderful. And I hope that I truly hope that the rest of us, you know, kind of mantra that to ourselves. So if we're not as strong or we're not as directed as you, at least you have given us the tools, you know, to get to the other side and not get pulled down. I mean, I think they're very valuable.
I hope people can learn from my tragedy that it's possible, that it makes sense not to get caught up in the negativity and the pettiness, and that life is good and it's going to be as good as you go after the good and drop the bad. Mm-hmm. It can only, good's got to prevail. So if you remember that and you seek out the good, and when someone comments to you about something petty or something that's unimportant, just say that. You know, I can't waste brain space on that. You know, that's not mine to worry about. And I believe that. I can't waste brain space on that. Mm-hmm. I'd rather put it into my writing or my podcast or my work. You know, mm-hmm. that's where it does positive
that's
things.
That's interesting.
Yep. Works for me. I hope it works for other people too.
Well, I'm going to try it because I'm one of those people that oh my God, let's just think about all the nasty stuff. So
it's
anyway.
Crazy when you flip it. It's yeah. great when you flip it. It really mm-hmm. is. It's extraordinary. Yep.
So Susan, this is the last question, but it's still like, I feel like we're hammering the same nail, but you know, the more you talk, the more we learn. How do you keep yourself in such a positive mode? You may have answered this, you know, the first 9 questions, but it's just like it's a talent. It's a talent. I know other women that lost their mother at an early age, and they stopped right then and there. You know the book Motherless Daughters, and they just stopped. It just stopped right there, and they were intelligent, beautiful, you know, productive mm-hmm. young people that just kind of like, you know, I just paused. I think that's the best word.
Yeah.
Paused.
Yeah, there's another book called Why Do Good Things Happen? Why Do Bad Things Happen to Good People? Which
right.
is in the same vein, which I did not enjoy. It's easier. It's lighter. It feels better to be positive for me. It feels better.
Right.
I like waking up happy. I like going to bed happy. I like doing good things during my day. The negative things drag me down. I think most people are like that. It's just you have to bring that to the top of your consciousness to say, it's so much better to be happy, to be content. And the negative things like envy and jealousy only make you
darker. Poison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're poison. And the lighter, the light, makes us all better. I look for the light. It's just that it's better for me. I think it's better for most people.
Well, your mother did a fabulous job the first
thank you.
Seriously, because, you know, it could take a lifetime for some of us to realize this. It just
one day I'll tell you a couple anecdotes about that. They're really amazing about my mother and my grandmother and how I found this way through them.
Oh,
they're
beautiful.
Really
God
amazing
bless
anecdotes.
Them.
Yeah.
God
yeah.
bless them
yeah.
wherever they are. I hope they're
we know where they are.
No, yeah. Well, I don't know if we really know where they are, but I hope that you know, they have peace and harmony and everything where they are, because it's tough living down here, and you seem to have mastered it under all conditions. So,
want to know the truth, Lois? It's better than any alternative I can think of.
Exactly. Exactly. Yep. And with that, we'll close number 20, and we'll see you for number 21.
Bye-bye, Lois.
Thank you. Thank you all.